Welcome back to the Villain Edit. Yay. This is what we're gonna do. We watch some competitive reality shows. We're gonna talk about them to you.
Oh, there's another verse to this song.
No, there isn't. There is not another verse.
Hi. This, as you may have gathered from our lovely theme song that I totally cleared with my co-host before I dove into it, is the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
I'm Rias Hall.
We have watched some television shows this week.
We have.
You know, some people say that the dregs of August are where there's no television shows at all to watch.
But that only applies if you have good taste.
Now, I feel we do have taste. There are shows we're not watching.
That's true.
Spinoffs of Ink Master we will not touch.
No.
Like,
Ink Master Revenge, I think it is,
Ink Master Redemption, where people who got bad tattoos come and yell at people. And there's this other spinoff that we've seen ads for, where apparently some of the ladies that used to be on Ink Master are driving around the country, beat Bobby Flay style, and like...
I guess they're going to tattoo expos, which is acceptable. Now they're like doing a head-to-head tattooing competition at an expo?
Something
that doesn't seem right.
Either it's if you beat one of them, you get to be on the next season of Ink Master, or they are trying to win their way back onto Ink Master.
I'm not sure what's going on.
And we never will know because we're not watching that show.
Nope. Even though the ladies that are on it were tattoo artists who I liked. I just don't need any more Ink Master time.
Yeah. You want to start with Ink Master?
Sure. What's little Davey Navarro and his pals up to this week?
Rias saw a video of young Jane's Addiction.
And I don't think Dave had any tattoos.
That's hard to believe.
It was adorable. He was like 9.
Did Lil Perry Farrell have any tattoos?
Lil Perry Farrell had some tattoos, I think. But it was kind of blurry and out of focus and artsy. It was too artsy to tell, but...
So here's what happened on this week's Ink Master. They made a big deal about how you have to sell your shop.
Right, which I thought would mean that they had to be nice to people.
They...
did not.
It was very confusing.
Basically, the human canvases came in, they said what ridiculous tattoos they want, and then they got a 10-minute rap session, I guess, with each shop, during which the shop people would try to convince them to let them do the tattoo, or would try to convince them to make another shop do the tattoo if it was a hard tattoo.
Yeah, like everybody made a big deal about how you have to sell yourself to each canvas, but... it wasn't entirely clear why you wanted to sell to everybody, because you really only want the people who
have easy tattoos.
Yeah. But as it happened, everyone wanted ridiculous stuff, like, I want a Virgin Mary that's also an alien, and that was one of the more sensible ones.
That was sensible. The one that was most ridiculous was, I want a realistic hourglass with a heart in the bottom, and fading into a clock on top. I also want it surrounded by bamboo and lightning bolts.
That's in round 2.
I'm so sorry.
There's a lot of rounds in this episode, so there wasn't much room for people shrieking at each other as usual.
Okay, well, what was the round 1? What were the round 1 tattoos?
Round 1 tattoos, Basilica got they were given a picture of this guy's grandpa and told to make it into an old-timey boxer, and he looks great.
It is one of the best tattoos I've seen on the show. I just really like it. It's an old-timey boxer. It's the guy's dad. It's not a photorealistic portrait exactly, which helps a lot.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Superman comic style thing. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's done with modern skills, but sort of in the aesthetic of old-timey boxing.
Yeah.
It's really good. There's also a pretty boring mermaid where the lady wanted bare breasts but no nipples, and I want her to be punk rock. And they couldn't do that because they had to do mermaid hair.
Right, so yeah, how are you going to show that a mermaid is punk rock if you're not allowed to pierce her nipples or give her a mohawk? Everybody knows that are the two only things that define something as punk rock. So anyway, she got a regular mermaid who was kind of horse-faced.
Yeah, nobody liked the face that much, but it wasn't that bad. I mean, you can tell it's a mermaid. There was the Virgin Mary alien. It came out great. It looks like, I'm going to say, a Jesus candle from Archie McPhee.
It does have a Jesus candle look to it, but it has a big, it's beautiful. It has an alien face, and instead of having the bleeding heart held to its chest, it's got a pyramid with a flame coming off.
Yeah.
And it's floating on some clouds. It's really nice.
Old Town Ink did a tiger that looked really good. Everybody
a
agreed.
Tiger?
In Africa? but
it was a beautiful tiger, but it was facing the wrong way.
Chris Nunez and Oliver Peck have very strong opinions on where things are supposed to be placed. And in this case, if you hold your arm the way they think everybody holds their arm, the tiger is on the back of the arm, so it is bad.
But it's a beautifully done tiger, so yeah. I don't really care where it is. Then there was a lion. There was supposed to be a lion fighting a snake.
And this is, guys,
and they wanted it in Chinese style.
And this is just a garbage tiger. The arm is...
It's a lion. It's a garbage lion.
It's a garbage lion.
It has an arm with, like, bodybuilder human musculature
in it.
Yeah,
it's clearly a human arm. And the other arm is barely there.
Its paw is like some kind of hand. The snake's okay, I guess. Yeah. But he's losing the fight, so who wants to look at the snake?
And then the last one is by Golden Skull. It's, let's see, a sad Pagliacci sitting side saddle on a rubber chicken carousel horse, and there are two stars in the background.
Yeah, he said sad Victorian circus clown sitting on a rubber chicken carousel horse, and that's what he got, and it's fine.
I like looking at this tattoo.
Yeah, because it's weird, but it's not a bad tattoo. It's just an interesting tattoo to have.
So round one is everybody had to do this. Round two, first, the winner of that round has immunity. So that was Basilica. They're the ones that did that boxer. They're safe for the rest of the episode. That's fine. Now you have five teams left, and another four human canvases come in. Everybody says, why are there only four canvases? This round of Sell Your Shop works like this. The canvases just look at the previous round's tattoos and select their tattooer based on that.
Oh, yeah. So all you know about your tattoo artist is that what their is their last work.
So the people are looking, standing there and go, let's see, do I want the people that all I know about them is they draw a tiger, or the people that all I know about them is they draw sad Victorian clowns sitting on rubber chickens?
I would go for the tiger because the tiger is beautifully rendered.
Yeah, the tiger.
But if you're a weirdo, you're going to want the circus clown.
The order in which they were taken was Virgin Alien, then Tiger, then the Lion and Snake, which surprised everybody because the judges hated that one, and then finally, Sad Clown. And that meant that Black Cobra, who did
a totally acceptable old school mermaid who was a little horse-faced.
Yeah. They are now up for elimination in this episode. And it's getting very confusing because we're only halfway through the episode. We already have one team that's safe and one team that's up for elimination, whatever that means.
Right.
Meanwhile, the four other teams all have to tattoo. They go out, they tattoo like maniacs.
Did they have to do like a tag team tattoo or something? Wasn't
it? No. Because there was a whole bunch of talk about how I'm going to take the lead on this one, but my buddy's going to take, they were not told they had to balance it out, but there's a lot of finger pointing at this point, especially at Unkindness. They're the ones with Aaron, who is good, and Doom Kitten, who is okay. The impression one gets.
I feel like Doom Kitten is mainly there because he's in love with Aaron.
In that case, that's a beautiful story, Rias.
I don't think she likes him.
Well, it's a tragic love story.
I think she sees him as a fellow tattoo artist, and she thinks he's good.
He's going to tattoo his way into her heart. And I mean that literally with a tattoo needle. It's a horror story now. It's going to take forever. Because those things do not go very far into the skin at all. You really have to gouge to get all the way to the heart.
It's true.
You know how long it's going to take just to get to the ribs?
There. Calm down.
All right. So now the other four teams are tattooing. One of them has to do a castle in the clouds, and that comes out fine.
Yeah, a fairy tale fantasy princess castle in the clouds with a galaxy in the background. And she wants it in a frame.
And that's what it looks like. And they successfully did not just do Sleeping Beauty's castle from Disney World or something.
No, they did some other castle from some other world.
Then there was the one that was an hourglass that had to have a human heart in the bottom and bamboo. And it all has to be realistic. I don't know why he said realistic.
I don't know what he doesn't even know what that means. When was the last time you saw a human heart in an hourglass? Never.
Never. That one I liked, though, because they showed us a shot of their computer while they were working, and you could see where they had searched for bamboo for reference, and they had clearly just photoshopped, like, a clip art heart and dragged it over.
On top of a picture of a,
And it looked cool.
Well, it's good. It's a reference. It's not...
Then there was one I don't remember at all. I just have written down, bad face in a globe.
Oh, remember that was that horrible guy with the dreadlocks coming out of his hat.
Oh, right, I
hate
that guy.
Here's a guy that you can kind of hate on sight. He's tall and skinny. He's got a fedora, which he has cut the top off of in order to let his hideous white boy dreads dangle out of the top.
Well, they kind of poke up and then dangle.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
He wanted a bunch of stuff, including a self-portrait of himself. And as soon as the tattoo artist said, this is a lot, and I don't think this is a good idea. He said, well, I own a shop, man. So, you know.
For a guy who owns a shop, he certainly didn't have too many other tattoos.
Yeah.
He's like, at my shop. Well, this isn't your shop, dude. This is an actual good shop.
And then the last one was the one you liked a lot. It was the surreal harpy lady.
Oh,
with
yeah.
ravens. Her,
yeah, she
her arms turned into wings, but not like normal wings. They had claws at the end.
Yeah, it was supposed to... She said she wanted a surreal woman with some ravens. And that was the information they were given, and they created something amazing. Was that... Who was that?
That was Unkindness, I believe.
Yeah, that might have been Doom. I think Doom... did that
because
one.
I know Unkindness Art won this round. This is such a complicated episode.
It's super complicated.
So now Basilica and Unkindness are both safe. And the other four teams are now up for elimination. So now what happens is that Basilica picks the style of the final challenge and Unkindness picks the topic.
Yeah.
And that's...
I think that's a fun challenge because one team picks the image, one team picks the style... And you actually are testing people's skills.
So Basilica picked Real American Traditional, which they did because they think Golden Skull and Black Cobra will be good at it, and that's the teams they like. And Unkindness picked Snakes, because, according to them, people have done a lot of bad snakes on this show.
They have. It's easy to fuck up a snake. I didn't think that that would be true.
Turns out it is. So, it's Real American Traditional and Snakes. Now, for the third round of tattoos in this one show, we have...
So many tattoos in this show!
Four nearly identical tattoos, because they're all doing...
Snakes. They're all doing...
Traditional snakes.
And traditional is, like, my least favorite style of tattooing, so I wasn't really into
it.
Yeah,
the judges
it's
go on about the belly scales, and I don't like the way American Traditional does the snake tongue. They all, like, have the jaw turn into the tongue.
Yeah.
Instead of having lower fangs, which I think look real cool.
Yeah. Give it some fangs. Make it a... But no, you don't want a realistic snake. You want a cartoony... snake like a biker would have gotten in the 1950s.
So eventually, what all that works out to is Empire State went home. They're Tommy something and Tommy's friend, who also has a name.
Right, Tommy the bald guy and...
Tommy's pal.
Isn't Tommy's pal Bubba?
Could be. I don't know. No. Nope.
Okay. Well, anyway, they went home.
So that takes us down to five teams, of which Unkindness Art is the only team that has been there from the very first episode of the season. So I think I'm rooting for either them or Basilica, and Basilica just because I am enjoying Christian.
I am kind of enjoying Christian.
He's open about his acts, and he has occasionally said things like, we have to do really well.
Because they're doing really well. He does at least admit that other people are capable of doing good tattoos.
But we're not going to watch any of the spinoff property because we don't care.
No, we don't. I don't want to watch people being mean to each other all the time. Everybody... That's why we have the Great British Baking Show, so we can watch nice people doing nice things.
We would be covering that, but that show takes place in another country. So we're going to wait for this new season, which will eventually get to us in a few months. Probably. You want to go to Project Runway?
Yes.
Let's walk the runway.
All right. Project Runway. What was this week? What did they force these poor suckers to do this week?
This was the dance theme. Remember, it started right. with Tim Gunn acting like he couldn't dance, like he never went to Studio 54.
Please. Tim Gunn was all over Studio 54.
You're not fooling anybody, Tim. So first they showed everybody a trailer.
Well, they said they showed them the whole film.
Showed them a clip, and then they showed a trailer. And I thought it would be really fun if that was a clip. Like, for no reason, the movie just has a montage of completely unrelated things, including ending with, like, the title of the film in the middle of the screen.
What was the film called? I totally forgot.
Leap. It's a dance.
Right. And then they got a show by a group called...
Hip-lay. It's hip-hop and ballet.
See?
And they combine hip-hop and ballet in a way that will be incredibly innovative to anybody who has never seen even one dancing movie.
Every dancing movie is about combining hip-hop and ballet.
This literally is the plot of Breakin'.
It is. You're right.
Also, Step Up. But I like Breakin'. Well, Step Up is a better movie. I concede that. But I'm very fond of Breakin'.
So what we got from Hip-lay was that they're not especially good at hip-hop dancing or ballet, so it was kind of like out-of-sync hip-hop dancing on their points of their toes.
Yeah, it's hard to do hip-hop when you're on point.
It's hard to do hip-hop when you're not on point.
That's fair. That's a good point. I mean, I can't do what they did, but I have kind of seen it before. I thought it was funny that it later led to Sean saying, "My vision was blending hip-hop with ballet."
What?
Like, that's
where did he get that idea from?
That's a very literal definition of vision. Like, that was her vision. She saw it happening in front of her.
Yes. Maybe she thinks it was a hallucination. Anyway.
So that's the challenge.
They have a $200 budget.
Do some kind of dance thing. And also, the word innovative was said pretty casually at the beginning of the episode.
Yes, your looks must be inspired by dance, motion, and innovation.
And for a lot of people, that meant your clothes have to transform on the runway.
Into something else. Like, oh, look, this skirt is also a cape.
I can take this off, then turn it upside down and wriggle into it. And then, to be honest, it looked pretty cool. But...
But there's a neck hole between your legs. You're wearing a sweater as pants.
Well, that's just practical.
I don't even know you anymore. So some people go to Mood, and my God, do they grab some hideous neon-colored fabrics.
I think it's because they were thinking of dance clothes.
I think they needed to fill out the show because we got lots of extra footage of Swatch, who is the dog of Mood.
Oh, here's my theory on that. Did you know there are 2 episode lengths for Project Runway?
No.
It's true. If you watch the first airing, which we always do, it's a 90-minute show. But if you watch any other airing, of which there are many throughout the week, 60-minute show.
Really? So we got an extra half hour of Swatch.
We have an extra 30 minutes every episode. And as you say, I think this week we lucked out because it's mostly Swatch.
Well, not mostly. If it was mostly Swatch, it would be the best show ever. Swatch is an elderly dog, and he looks like he has had a good life. I'm not sure how many years more he's got in him, but he seems like a real sweetheart.
They did see him moving very slightly.
Yeah, he did walk around. He does walk around the store, but he's a sweetie.
So, like, before we get to the actual dress, I just want to say I thought it was interesting to see, like, Michael... who is from Mexico, was doing a lot of bonding with Margarita.
They both speak Spanish.
Yeah, she's from Puerto Rico. Her dress, at least at the beginning, she was worried that it looked costumey. And I will say it looked specifically like the costume you wear during the America number in West Side Story.
Except in white.
Yeah.
The costumes in the America number in West Side Story were brightly colored. This was just white cotton.
Yeah, but it's the same kind of shape. It's very...
Cheetah Rivera?
Yeah, it's... I mean, to be fair, that's a Puerto Rican.
It is. It's dancing. It is a Puerto Rican dancing dress, and that's what she was trying to make.
I just found it
She originally had a lot of red ruffles on it, which they ended up, she ended up putting, removing most of them and putting one on the inside of the skirt, so you just got a flash of red, which was a really good idea, because that needed to be edited down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was nice seeing her bond with somebody.
There was a bunch of stuff about how Brandon zones in, and, like, they did a lot of editing to make it look like he was a crazy person. Like,
yeah, like, showing it, he's like, oh, he's in his zen zone, and then they would play some chimes.
Yeah, and sitar music.
And sitar
and
music.
Really, the guy's just trying to concentrate in a very loud room.
Yeah, he's like, just trying to get some damn work done.
You can't make fun of him and also show so many clips of people complaining about the twins being loud. Which, by the way, I'm sure the twins are loud. I'm sure they're distracting. They also seem like very nice people who are giving out hugs to everybody. Stop being mean to them.
Well, it is possible, as you know, to be very nice and very annoying at the same time.
I've made my choice.
I know. Me too.
I don't know. I kind of like the twins. I do think at least one of them, specifically Sean, is going to go home pretty soon.
I think she's going to have to. I'm actually worried that the stress of this show is going to break her.
Yeah.
She's a... She looks punk rock, but she's kind of a fragile little flower.
I did like the moment right before the dresses came out where Sean, they had a clip of Sean really liking Brandon's outfit and then Claire not liking it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything we can do to separate their portrayal, yeah. I think, would be good.
Yeah.
This is also another episode. Maybe this is where the extra time comes from. These behind-the-scenes shots that keep happening when we come back from commercials.
Oh, yeah, we do get those, and I bet the other shows don't, because we're special.
Those are really fun. Like, we got to see people running around because Heidi's shoe had broken, and we got to see Heidi talking about, oh, my hair's up on top in a knot because I came here so late they didn't have any time to do anything else with my yeah. hair. So, do you want to get to the dresses?
Let's get to the dresses.
This is Erin's dress. I didn't like it at all.
Erin's dress has one pant leg. Okay.
Erin is very into asymmetry, I think, both aesthetically and as a general lifestyle choice.
I agree. So he's got a dress that's got a bell sleeve on the right and a...
It's not a dress. It's a pantsuit.
It is, I guess, a pantsuit.
It's just one of the legs has a skirt.
It's just that one of the legs has a skirt sewn to the bottom of it. The other does not. One of the sleeves is a normal sleeve, and one of the sleeves is kind of a glove. It is what I would call a hot mess.
I was not into it, frankly, at all. It was not in the top or bottom.
Bizarrely enough. Okay, Amy Bond is the one who thinks that you should wear a sweater. Okay, so she made... Okay, let me start.
She is the professor... she's the one I'm kind of rooting against just because she said, I have a lot of tricks in my bag, so I don't think this is going to be that hard.
Okay, so she made a sweater dress, which you can wear right side up, and look, it's a sweater dress. Or you can take it off and put your legs through the sleeves like an idiot. And then you can pull the bottom of the dress up across your shoulders, and it's a dress sweater instead of a sweater dress.
With a weird drop crotch. I don't like that end of it. The sweater dress end of it looked fine. Wisely, that was the going out dress. So the model came out with it looking, right. I think, not great, and then turned into something that I think looked fine.
Fine, but not great.
Yeah.
It's a big, loose-fitting sweater vest.
Ayana.
She made something awesome. It's like a layer cake of...
Okay, well described.
Okay. No, it's multiple layers. It's a pantsuit, multiple layers of ruffle. She hand-painted the fabric underneath with stars, and the ruffles are made of a black transparent fabric, so you can see the stars through it. I think it's very pretty.
All right. Botany, no surprise, did some very bright colors. She claimed that she was inspired by seeing, for some reason in Leap, there's an adventure character who makes an ornithopter, and she used that as an excuse to make a cape, which I was very worried about. But then she separated out the panels of the cape.
With mesh, with a black mesh in between the panels, and it is gorgeous.
The use of negative space was so good that Botany really demonstrated, yes, I like big, bright colors, but
I know how to use them and break them
like
up.
Like, where not to use them.
Yeah. It was a simultaneous exercise in excess and restraint.
And already, I feel like I will know Botany's dress immediately.
Right. Her aesthetic is bright colors. Is this a...
This next one is Brandon.
Brendan made a deconstructed... Well, you know, he likes to make big bags, baggy things.
He likes to play with shapelessness, which is normally a huge warning sign that the person doesn't know what they're doing.
In this case, he knows what he's doing. He made this is it deconstructed? Kind of a deconstructed dress shirt with some extra sleeves on it and buttonholes, and it's very starched and rigid fabric.
It's
amazing.
It's so clearly exactly what he intended that the judges couldn't even pretend that any other dress was in the running for being number one.
Yeah, they were just amazed by it. And I am too, because it's impossible to describe. It's not
But
it's amazing.
This is a really fun episode for me because now I get Brendan's aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I hate to keep bringing this back, but compare this to Ink Master, where I don't know anyone's aesthetic. Now I know what Brandon is about, and I know what to expect from
Brandon him. Brandon likes oversized clothes. The ones he's made in the past were kind of baggy, but he also has the capability of sewing very well.
Yeah, this show is so professionally made that they have conveyed practically all of the designers' personalities and aesthetics to me. So
yeah.
I'm so impressed by that. Claire?
Claire had a plus-size model. She made a large red dress.
Is that a dress?
Was it a pantsuit?
I think it's a pantsuit. I can see air between the legs.
Okay, so it's a giant palazzo pant, which would be great, but the chest area of the dress does not fit a human chest.
Yeah, and it's all just
she
red.
She can't wear a bra under it, and it's makes her look saggy, and the pants, I don't know, they don't flow correctly.
It's got this thing, you know how a few seasons ago the big thing was everybody had a big obvious zipper down the spine?
Mm-hmm.
Now everyone's about extra straps just dangling off.
Well, I like extra straps just dangling off.
Right.
But, oh, good lord.
Deontay!
I forgot what Deontay made. Deontay made an ice skater dress with a in the front, and then a long train type thing in the back, and he made it out of this color. What would you call that color?
Mustard.
I don't think
it's vibrant enough. Like, Zach said it was vibrant in the room. It's not bright enough to be an ice skater dress. It just looks like a dull yellow to me.
What are those nuts that are green?
Pistachios?
It's pistachio color.
All right.
It is not a good choice. The entire thing is a pistachio collar. It has a big ruffly neck collar.
It's all bunched up and bad in the back. Deontay eventually had to tell the judges that he was a little handicapped because a sewing needle went all the way through his thumb.
It did.
He clearly
did. You could see it go through. You could see him call the medics. They had to take the needle. They had to pull it back out. It was nasty.
And he didn't want to use this as an excuse, but on the other hand, you don't want to go home, so you have to eventually say it. And this is a point where I will say, we saw one person ask him about it the next day, and that was Claire.
Uh-huh.
I think Claire's a nice person.
I do. I just, okay, what do we got here?
Yeah, Kentaro.
Kentaro made some booty shorts and a floppy shirt that looks kind of like a sweatshirt, except shorter, and he put a transparent one-layer tulle skirt over it and some leg warmers.
Kentaro was talked up a lot in this episode because dance is a classical art form, and he used to be a classical pianist, which
is about that a lot.
A bit of a stretch, and this wasn't very good.
No. Oh, yeah, Kenya. She got this hideous houndstooth pattern fabric, which I thought you could make nothing good out of. It's the kind of fabric when you see it, you're like, nothing good will come of this fabric.
It's not even just houndstooth. It's like houndstooth with different thicknesses.
Yeah.
So it creates
It's like
a
an
very
optical illusion.
Yeah, it is. It's like if there was a diagonal line across all this, you would not think it was straight, but it would be.
Yeah. It's like looking into another dimension.
But it came out great, I thought.
If you let your eyes unfocus and you stare at it for a while, a unicorn will come out.
Wow.
But it actually, she turned it into an amazing outfit with a jumpsuit underneath and a coat on top. It did not transform into anything, which was nice.
Yeah. Okay, this is Kudzanai. And just as Brandon was super obviously the top, Kudzanai was super obviously the bottom. I felt like he had no ideas, so he just stapled a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, he got some multicolor feather trim, such as you might see a kindergarten child use in an art project where they had to be an Indian chief. Back in the 50s, not now, because that's not cool.
Yeah, kindergartners are much more sensitive now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he put that across the butt. The rest of it looks like a big salmon-colored bag with various zippers sewn to it to be trim. It's all over the place.
I felt so bad for him because he was the last of the top and bottom. You know, they have the top three and bottom three, and you're never entirely sure which you are. But he was number six. So he can count. He knows there's been three top looks and two bottom looks, mm-hmm. So he's in the bottom. And also, the fifth person was Brandon. So he's standing there listening to the judges just gush all over Brandon.
And he knows.
He's like, oh, and I'm going to wait, and I'm going to be the last bottom person. And then they got to him, and Heidi said it looked juvenile and like a pinata exploded. Zach said he hated the balance and the construction. And there's extra zippers and... The sleeves.
Okay, I think that if you stretch the sleeves out, they would be like 6 feet long.
Oh, like Gonzo's arms.
Yes, like Gonzo's arms. But instead, they have pulled the sleeves up and somehow sewn them down so that it's just a big ugly wad of fabric at her wrist.
It was ugly and it makes me sad.
Oh, honey, don't be sad.
Margarita did a toned-down version of what she was going to do. Her big innovation was turning her top around.
Right. She was going to have a backless top, and now she's got a frontless top.
Which works on a model. I don't know if it works with someone with a bust.
Yeah, that model had no bust. If you had a bust, you could not wear this dress this way. Also, it made her rib cage look weird.
Yeah, I thought it made the model look fat because the waistline of the skirt came all the way up to just below the ribs.
Yeah.
And so all you see is the bottoms of the ribs sticking out.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a successful look, but the judges loved it.
Yep, it was in the top three. This is Michael. Michael did... it's fine.
Kind of a bag dress with some cool sleevey things on it.
Yeah. Samantha did a pretty cool look.
She did a dress which was like kind of...
It's like an extended corset, really.
Yeah, it's like an extended corset that floofs out on the side and there are zippers up the side so that you can unzip them and make it floofier.
Yeah.
That's a technical term.
Floofier.
Floofier.
And Sean did, what do you say, jogging pants and a wrap top?
Yeah.
She did also big, some loose, straps hanging off.
Floppy jogging pants, a wrap top, and it had an extra strap hanging off. They were drawstring pants.
Sean's been very impressed with her own work, and she's put out like these pants and
those
silver
shorts.
Hot pants. And
I worry about her. I worry about her taste level.
I worry about her taste level and also her concentration level.
Yeah, like, she's a little OCD or something.
It's not going well for her, in my opinion.
She can't seem to focus. I think that's the opposite of OCD.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
ADD.
Yeah, that too. AD&D. She loves playing that AD&D.
Who doesn't? Second edition forever. The heck with you, 3.5.
Yeah!
It's an old school gaming reference. All right. Face Off Game Face is a fun television show in which drastically overqualified judges watch a group of people, half of whom we recognize every week.
Right, because we've watched all this, because they're all ex-contestants from Face Off.
And we don't remember every single contestant, we remember some. For instance, right. Robert, the weird German dentist that everybody thinks has a fake accent.
Yes, Robert did move from Germany, but I believe he moved from Germany when he was like 6, and yet he still has this accent.
Which he uses so he can say, I am back for vengeance, and there will be mega glitter and destruction everywhere. He is super fun, and I love him.
I love him, too.
The next contestant was Corinne, who I don't remember, but she is apparently a makeup department head for Z Nation, and that's a pretty good gig.
Yeah, good for her.
Then there's Alana. I do remember Alana.
She used to have bright red curly hair. She had never seen a horror movie. She was very good.
She has been doing makeup for bands. She's done Pentatonix, Fall Out Boy, and Todrick Hall.
Yeah, she does music video makeup for people who want to be monstrous in their music videos. And the fourth, so good for them.
Fourth guy was Scott Fenster, who I don't remember at all.
Scott was from Florida. I do vaguely remember him. Since being on Face Off, he went to a convention and found a girl he loved, and they got married. So good for Scott.
And he worked on Tyler Perry's Boo.
He worked on Tyler Perry's Boo, and he also works at a big haunt, which I love.
He said that would help him a lot, because when you do a haunt, everybody comes in, and then you have to do like 40 makeups in a half hour and get the place open.
Yeah. And also, people who do haunts are awesome.
Yeah. The judges this week were V, Neville, and Rick Baker. So it looks like we're going to have V and Rick Baker every week, and that's fine.
This week, I think V was playing the role of the mean judge, and Rick has a hard time being mean,
Rick,
I think.
There were some things Rick didn't like, and he strove very hard to say something nice. Aw, bless him.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to try that hard, Rick. Everybody already adores you.
Whereas V was all, they need to get painting.
Yeah. I think V really wants to be competing on this show, and it's frustrating her that she can't.
Oh, I really want her to be on the show, and I'm frustrated that she's not there.
Round one. What was round one?
Aquatic creatures. They had an aquarium and some nets. Pull a fish out, put it in a little aquarium, and make a creature based on it.
Now, were they very elusive fish?
No, they went wherever I did go.
That's two references, both to Meaning of Life, by the way.
High five!
Nothing but the hits.
Yeah. We only make references to movies that are at least 20 years old.
I just meant of Monty Python references. You go pretty far down the list before you get to these.
All right. So they chose a fish. Alana got a puffer fish, who was adorable. Rick said that's the best fish because it has spines.
Yeah.
Scott got something called a Australian Harlequin tusk fish, which is basically a stripy fish.
It's Nemo.
It's not Nemo.
It's orange and white striped, and it's a fish. It is Nemo.
All right, whatever.
Say, I'm not an ichthyologist.
Nemo's a clownfish. We all know that. And Robert got something called a flaming anglefish.
That's just a red fish.
Which is a red fish and an orange and a yellow fish. Very brightly colored, but kind of boring. Corinne got the stripy Tim Burton / V. Neal eel.
We called it a Tim Burton eel because it has that black and white stripe effect that he likes. But then we realized, actually, V. Neal must have had something to do with that because, like, she did Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice turns into one of them snakes with the Tim Burton stripes.
Sure.
Rick Baker was a little skeptical partway through. He felt everybody was in trouble because they weren't painting fast enough.
He was he was expressing that as being so worried. He was so worried they weren't going to get done in time. Whereas V. Neal is, they better paint faster.
Yeah. There was some talk at the beginning where you have to know whether your concept is based more on prosthetics or paint. So like the puffer fish, gotta have prosthetics, gotta have a lot of pokey bits.
Yeah.
Everyone else, maybe you could lay off the prosthetics so you can concentrate on your painting.
Right, because your fish is not pointy.
That is not what Robert did. Robert had 3 different appliances, and they were all different. So he had 1 forehead, 1 nose, and 1 cowl.
Yeah. I think that the cowls were unnecessary.
Yeah. The judges thought so, too. They were thinking you could go mermaid, and of course mermaids always have long, flowing hair.
Right. And you don't have to apply the skull cap or anything. You just send them out.
I didn't like Robert's mostly because he just cut out the chin.
From the face prosthetic and glued the prosthetic down, but it was super thick. And it had an edge that looked cut. And it wasn't blended down.
It looked like a red Lectroid from Buckaroo Banzai.
It did look like a red Lectroid.
And those are the bad guys.
Yes. In case you were wondering.
Corinne's, I thought, looked kind of like Clayface. And didn't have enough stripes on it.
It didn't have... It was... Okay, to start with, the moray eel she's supposed to be painting is very black and very white stripey.
Yeah.
And very handsome.
That is its primary characteristic, is that it is striped.
Yes. And she painted her makeup brown.
That's kind of her theme for the whole episode, is... Her paint gets away from her, and then she tries to fix it with more paint, and it all comes out kind of monochromatic, boring brown.
Yeah. It was brown, and then she tried to paint the white stripes on with what appeared to be grease paint, because she couldn't get the regular paint to stick.
Yeah.
And it only had, like, one stripe on it, and it was just a sad little thing.
Because you know what grease paint is famous for, is sticking to things.
Yeah. Well, she said she was using a cream paint, but a cream makeup. That's grease paint. We all know it.
None of the fish really impressed me that much.
None of the fish were good. Alana's puffer fish was well painted, and she chose a very pointy prosthetic. She did put some little elf ears on that I didn't care for, and she did some gills, which I didn't care for.
She put on huge gills that took up the entire neck, which I didn't think were necessary.
No, I think she should have put those on the chest area across the top of the collarbones. That would have looked more alien and cool. But whatever, she won that round. At the end of round one, everyone thinks they have failed, and they're not wrong.
Robert was the least wrong in that he did go home.
Yes.
And he agreed... And said something along the lines of he would be back for vengeance or something.
Right.
And great to see you, Robert. Don't be a stranger.
My note is Robert's prosthetic is terrible, poorly fitted, poorly glued, and poorly painted.
Aww.
He is out because his makeup lacked sophistication.
Round two was demonic possession, where they had a bunch of letters that were allegedly written from the clergy to the Vatican describing...
The symptoms of a possession.
And there were like 12 of them, so I feel like this was a challenge that got axed from regular Face
Off. And they're like, well, we got all those letters.
Like, because there's so much to work from here as opposed to pick a fish and replicate it.
Right. So the artists each choose a letter that describes the symptoms of the possession, such as the young girl was hanging from her toes from the ceiling and had large leathery wings, or something like that.
That's quite a possession.
Yeah. So then they have to not make the possessed person, but from the description of that, make the demon that possessed them. There's a lot of layers to it, which I kind of liked.
Corinne took the description of her victim having translucent skin to mean that she was in a cave. And you know what else lives in a cave is bats. She's going to make a bat.
Yes.
Bats do not have translucent skin, by the way. They are famously black.
Yes.
They are Vengeance and the Night.
Yes. And they're so cute.
So cute.
Anyway.
Scott had a more direct thing saying make a bat, so he made a bat.
Yeah. Scott at least had the girl that was hanging from the ceiling by her toes. She had hideous feet claws. And so he's like, I'm going to make a bat. Somebody else.
Alana
made just a big old demon using basically an orc face.
Her description had the victim biting the heads off hamsters, and that really seemed to freak Alana out. She didn't even like saying it out loud.
Yeah, she didn't even like reading it. She was grossed out by it. So she got something with big old teeth, which looked like an orc, I believe.
Yeah. And then she put giant demon horns up on top of the head and painted the whole thing red.
That's pretty, yeah.
And at the end of the round, the judges were like, well... There's cliche.
It is a stereotypical demon, and you know that demons hate being stereotyped. Yeah.
I mean...
But you can look at it, and you know what the challenge was.
There's no question she made a demon.
Right. The other things they had were... I referred to it, we have an orc, a witch, and a bat. Scott made the witch. He was trying to do... he was also trying to do a bat. But he made the mistake of putting on a long gray wig... And a shredded up dress, and it looked a lot like the witch in Snow White that hands him the apple, the crone.
Yeah, it was just a witch with a weird nose. The wig did not please the judges. They did like that he went to the trouble of sticking claw-like toenails onto the model's feet.
Right, because they did talk about the feet. He did put some false toenails on the feet.
Corinne made a thing that looked like what I'm going to call a pig monk or possibly a gargoyle.
Yeah, the paint read stone. It read stone texture. The paint was like those cans of stone texture that you get to spray on things.
Yeah.
It just looked like she'd straight up sprayed him down with that.
But stopped before she got to the cowl, and she should have gone all the way with it.
Yeah. So it was a pig with big bat ears.
Yeah, both Corinne and Scott talked about trying to replicate a bat's face, which bothered me because bats have two kinds of faces. They either have little fox faces, you can use pretty much any canine look, or they have horrible mutant faces that look like they've been hit in the face with a hatchet.
Yeah.
And for that, you can get weird, but you don't just use a hog nose.
And claim it's a bat.
Yeah.
But I bet there is a hog nose bat, though.
There is, but I don't think it has a pig nose. I think it's one of them little turned up nose bats.
It probably is.
Look it up. Ryus is looking up the hog nose bat, so I will take the time to tell you that Scott was out because his thing was too witchy and monochromatic.
Yeah, it was pretty witchy and oh my god, it's so cute!
But yeah, that's one of the ones that just looks like
a pig nose.
His nose has been split in two or something.
He's got little unicorn horn.
That one's my favorite, where he's climbing on the fingertip.
Oh, that's a little baby one.
All right. Round three was called The Whimsical World of Harry Potter. Whimsical is always a code word on the show. It means you're supposed to be funny. Neither of the designers went for funny, but they were supposed to. The gimmick was, it's still me because Ryus is just awestruck by bats.
I'm sorry. The hognose bat is also known as the bumblebee bat because it's so tiny and cute. All right, I've closed the window on the internet. I'm fine with not looking at bats. Let's get on to round three, shall we?
Yes. They are given a Harry Potter spell and told to do the makeup of what happens if that spell has backfired on the student that tried to cast it.
The spells were Incarceros.
That means to bind up with ropes. From what I understand of the internet, that's a very popular spell among Harry Potter students.
And Gemino.
That's, I guess this
one. A duplication spell.
Because of Gemini, the twins. Now that's Greek, J.K. Rowling, not fake Latin. I think you cheated.
Do you think J.K. Rowling had anything to do with this challenge? I think they made these up.
I think these are actual spells, because they have the right level of...
Okay.
Now, at this point, I think Corinne is showing a pattern of creatively interpreting the instructions.
She is, because...
When she was giving Gemino, which is supposed to be create multiple copies of something, and it has reflected onto the person who cast it, her interpretation was, well, I'm going to say that he was pointing at the wand at a garden gnome, and that reflected on him, so now he's turning into a garden gnome.
It was a she. She's turning into a garden gnome.
Now, that has nothing to do with Gemino. And also, her makeup didn't look anything like a garden gnome. She insisted that it was a Harry Potter-appropriate garden gnome.
But even V was not buying that.
Clearly, to me, Corinne decided what makeup she wanted to do, and then just interpreted until she got there. Like, with her demon challenge, where she saw a word that she could interpret to be... eventually getting to a bat. Yeah.
She saw, translucent skin, cave dwelling, bat.
Yeah. I think she was going to make a bat no matter what she got.
Right.
Which, to be fair, the only thing that connected her demon look to the instructions were that it had teeth and the victim bitten the head off a hamster. Not easy. Hamster heads don't stick out that far.
No. I mean, they don't even have necks.
Like, if you're hitting just the head, you're putting some real detail work in, I think.
That's why the geeks always preferred chickens. A chicken's got a good long neck.
Yeah. So, Corinne turned in a look that basically just had some glop on the side of the head. She did put some black to sort of show the backfire of the wand, which I thought was a neat touch.
Yeah. She said, and maybe some little powder burns. But nonetheless, it had nothing to do with the spell. What she should have done is, got three different nose prosthetics and put them all on her face and say, she was trying to do a nose job or something like that.
Or put a whole extra head on, sort of Zaphod Beeblebrox it up.
Yeah. You can't do that in that time period. But yeah, something like that.
And
maybe another face coming out the side of her head.
And the judges didn't like how, again, her paint kind of came out brown and dull. There was a moment of interaction in the episode where Alana said, Corinne, be a friend. Pretend we're not competing. Is my paint okay? And Corinne said, well, from here I see one color. And Alana said, shrug it off, because that's all she saw in Corinne's either.
Yeah.
Which I liked, because even on this show where there's no time for interaction, people still kind of like each other.
Right, so we've talked a lot about what Corinne did in this challenge. What Alana did was pretty... She had no idea. She's like, I don't know how to do this. What am I going to do with this?
She's freaked out by the idea of the spell. She's spent a lot of time saying, this doesn't sound like a funny thing to me.
Yes. So she got a Frankenstein, what I consider a Frankenstein face prosthetic, because it had a lot of fake stitches in it. She put it on him. She ran some string through the stitches so that it looked like he was like his lips were sewn together and stuff.
She did a good job, but just, in my opinion, followed the prosthetic. It was a full face thing.
She painted it nicely. She followed the prosthetic. What she should have done, and both V and I feel pretty strongly about this.
V felt very strongly about this.
Get some rope and follow the lines of the prosthetic with that so that it looks like he's tied up in a knot. Yeah. Do some macrame. Something.
The face kind of looked twisted around. If you add ropes to make it look like that's why it's twisted, then you're super on theme and it looks great.
Yeah.
But she was more on theme than Corinne, so she won. And she was stunned by this. She's very excited because she has a broken ankle or something and has a lot of medical bills.
Yeah. So now she can pay off some of her medical bills.
So, Alana won. I'm happy for her.
Yeah, she's always seemed nice to me.
That is a fun, low-stakes show.
It is.
Now, speaking of low stakes...
Let's talk about the food truck race.
We don't have to talk that much about it, but...
Did they have to make steaks?
No.
Oh.
They had to make pecan desserts, because they were in the South.
Oh, that's right. The first challenge has something to do with desserts. Pecans linger ominously in the foreground.
Ooh.
I take good notes. That's because you were in the bathroom and I had to think of something. These pecans must be shelled in 15 minutes, and the team with the most pecans will get some kind of ridiculous advantage.
The advantage is that they will get advice from a local brilliant baker named Jan. I didn't catch what Jan does.
She's a local brilliant baker.
Okay. Raised in the South, shelled the most pecans. Congratulations. My favorite part about this right here is that Mikey from the Breakfast Club and Mrs. Stick-em-up were taking selfies together.
Yeah.
And I would so much rather watch a show where the competitors take selfies with each other.
They're like, oh, we lost. Let's take some selfies. It was cute. It was pleasant.
These people appear to actually like each other. I like watching people who like each other more than I like watching people who hate each other.
And when Braised in the South won the pecan contest, they did a little side interview in which they said, this is a sign that we are meant to be here. And that just cracks me up no end. Really?
Yeah.
Really? God let you shell the most pecans to give you the sign that you're supposed to be on the great food truck race?
He works in mysterious ways, Rias. Very mysterious ways.
All right.
And having said that, the actual episode kind of played out the way they all do. People drive around town and try to find a place to park and sell stuff. We learned that Mikey doesn't like having a price on his menu so
yes.
that he can hike it up when necessary.
Right, so if people look like they want to spend more money...
Now it's a $7 dessert instead of a $6 dessert. This is wildly unethical, but,
but it's
so great because you look at Mikey and you go, ah, look at this kid. He's wearing lipstick and
eyeshadow.
Mascara,
he's got...
This kid is all business. He is about the money. He is here to soak you for every dollar you have. And I am full of respect for it.
He has managed on every food challenge to make the food fit with the three things they serve on their truck.
Yeah, they make a homemade donut. In this case, they also put a pecan glaze on top of it. And it looked amazing, by the way.
They do breakfast nachos.
Which, okay, fine.
And they do mocha.
And that's it. Those are the only three things they make, which is a great idea.
Right, and then whatever the challenge is, like with the fish challenge, they're like, okay, we're going to put some fish on this breakfast dog, on this breakfast chips.
Yep. So the special challenge this week was everybody has a pecan-based dessert. In this case, he has added pecans to his existing dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever team makes the most profit off their dessert gets an extra $300.
Yeah.
At one point during the episode, Tyler called around and said, "Hey, everybody, for the next hour, your pecan-based dessert costs $1.
So, weirdly, so every food truck decided that having a happy hour was an important thing.
And
they're all there, happy hour desserts, $1. But what did Mikey do this episode, Monty?
He pushed the other food. If people asked, how much is that donut you have listed on your menus, he'll tell them $1. But you're not making money at $1. So his plan was just to ride out that hour and then get back to the profitable price of $6 or $7.
A great idea.
Yeah. Everybody else just dumped their profit margin because they were buying into the show's idea.
You got to sell these for $1. Let's sell all of them. No.
You don't need to do that. And in fact, the Breakfast Club won the challenge, made over $1,000 off just that one dish, so got an extra $300.
Right. Which was good because they were kind of in the bottom at the end, which I did not expect to see.
The number one truck was Braised in the South with $3,200. I say that just to give you a sense of the range. Number one, $3,200. Number two, $2,400. That's Southern Frenchy. Number three, $2,200. That's Breakfast Club.
Now, does that $200 include the $300 they won?
That $2,200 includes the extra $300 they made. And we don't learn how much Mr. Po' Boys or Stick 'Em Up got. They were the bottom two. We did, as soon as the top amount was announced, Braids in the South, you guys made $3,261. We got to see Mr. Po' Boy saying, $3,000, we're going home. We did not make that. This time, they're announcing the name of the team and then the amount, which I think is a long overdue improvement. They used to announce the amount first, which should be telling each team whether this is them.
Right.
When he says, if he says, number one team with $3,000, all the other teams would be like, well, that's not
us. I didn't
make
$3,000. That must be somebody else. Yeah.
So the bottom two teams were Mr. Po' Boys and Stick 'Em Up. Stick 'Em Up went home. Everybody sad.
Everybody loves shouty mama, except for me. I find her a bit tiring. But she seems nice, and I'm sure she'll be fine.
Yeah.
She owns a bakery. She's got business.
So we're already down to four teams because this show does not mess around. It has to get all of its episodes in before the actual fall season starts at the end of September.
Right.
Everybody turns back to young Sheldon or whatever.
Oh, God. So Stick 'Em Up goes home, and next week they're going to Nashville. I have a lot of relatives who live in Nashville. Maybe they'll be on the show.
We were told that Nashville has a thriving music scene.
What?
And an even more thriving food scene. And I don't believe that second part because it's Nashville. The music scene has to come first, doesn't it?
I think the music scene comes first. I'm not sure about the food scene. I know that at one point when we had someone pass away in our family, people from his church brought us more food than an army could eat, and it was all delicious. So
I will say this, I am certain they have a thriving bar scene because it's full of musicians. Wow. So food trucks ought to do pretty well there.
It's true. They got a whole giant NASCAR themed bar.
You were going to say NASCAR and I love it.
I was. They got a NASCAR bar, they got the world's ugliest carousel designed by an artist named Red Grooms.
Very specific.
My family took me to that carousel when we were visiting, and they made a huge deal out of it. And then they're like, "You have to come see our new carousel. It's absolutely beautiful." And then I got out of the car, and I said, "This is the most hideous thing I've ever seen." And they fell about laughing.
You are a delight. Did they know you were going to say that? Was it a grand setup?
It was a grand setup.
Oh, I love it. All right, well, we're going to catch up with all of these shows next week, probably assuming they're all on. And that will do us for this. Do you want to hear the theme song again?
Will you sing it for me?
Saying goodbye from the villain edit. This is what we've gone and done. We watch some reality TV shows.
Someone get me a gun.
Da 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 da.